a hidden danger that could be disrupting your sleep.
Successful treatment for sleep apnea can be a life-changing, absolutely life-changing. They're much more aware during the day. They feel much better. Their headaches go away. A lot of people who have had chronic anxiety and depression for years and are on a bunch of medicines, they'll find that they don't need that anymore.
An explanation of sleep apnea today in the Upper Cumberland. It's estimated that some 39 million U.S. adults have obstructive sleep apnea. What is it? How does it affect the body? How can it be treated?
Dr. David Henson, thank you for being with us.
Well, thank you for having me here.
Sleep apnea.
Yes, sir.
How do you define it, first of all?
Well, sleep apnea is where, while we're asleep at night, our throat closes off periodically. And so we're trying to breathe, but we can't move any air because the throat is closed off. And so what happens is our oxygen may fall down, our heart rate go up, and we make a lot of adrenaline while we're trying to breathe at night and no air is moving. And so all of that adrenaline keeps us mostly in a very shallow sleep, and we don't get into deep restorative sleep at nighttime, so that we tend to feel very sleepy the next day. But even more important than that is that while we're having all these apnea periods, we're making a lot of chemicals called adrenaline that go into our system. Our body's trying to keep us awake a little bit. And so when we get all that adrenaline, our muscles will tense up a little bit, our throat will open, and we are able to take some breaths. And then as soon as we get relaxed again, because we're breathing better, we go back into deeper sleep, and then we block our airway again. And that continues on and on and on throughout the whole time that we're trying to sleep at night. Sometimes that'll happen 5 or 10 times an hour, sometimes 100, 120 times an hour. And so, of course, that can be very disruptive to sleep.
And we know how important that deep sleep is to not just how you feel, but it's very important to all the functions of the body.
It is. It turns out that it's important for many reasons, like you alluded to. One is that it helps our immune system. So that if we don't sleep well, our immune system doesn't work well, and we get sicker more often. And a lot of people find that when they are not sleeping well, they're sicker. And that's one way. And all of our hormones are tied one way or another into sleep. So that if we're not sleeping well, or if we're sleeping irregularly, which often happens with sleep apnea, all those hormones then are not where they need to be. So, for instance, thyroid hormone is associated with a certain stage of sleep, and growth hormone, insulin, testosterone, all of our hormones are tied in with sleep. So if we're not sleeping well, all our hormones are not working in the way they should be, and that's one of the reasons that we feel so bad the next day.
Obviously, I can't imagine that sleep apnea is anything new, but it seems like we hear about it more today. Am I reading that correctly?
Yes, you are. One of the reasons is because we in the South love our food, and we love to eat food, and especially greasy food like fried chicken and things like fried okra, all that good stuff that we enjoy. And so in the South, we have the heaviest BMI of all regions throughout the country. So we're, and fatter, if you will, we have about 70% of people are either overweight or, frankly, obese in the South. And so obesity is one of the factors that's tied in with sleep apnea and makes it more common. In men, up to about 30% of adult men have some degree of sleep apnea, and about 15 to 20% of adult women do. And that is approximately a doubling from what it was during the 1990s. So it is more common than it has been.
How is it diagnosed?
Well, first you have to come and see me. and we do an interview and a history and physical, and we figure out whether you most likely have sleep apnea, and most of the people who are referred to me by their primary care doctors fall in that category. And so we end up doing a sleep test. And there are two kinds of sleep tests that we do. There's one that we can do in the home called a home sleep test. And then there's one that we do in our sleep center called an attended sleep test. And to some degree, we just try to decide which is best. But to a large degree, a patient's insurance helps us decide, for better or for worse, what would be the appropriate study. So going for a home sleep test is how we make the diagnosis.
We're talking about sleep apnea and an issue that affects more and more of us, especially in our part of the world. Dr. David Henson is with us from Cookeville Regional's Sleep Center. We continue our conversation about sleep apnea with Dr. David Henson. Do a lot of cases of sleep apnea occur without people ever knowing that they have sleep apnea?
Well, yes, sir. Thank you for asking. That's a very interesting question, because usually what happens is that sleep apnea creeps up on us over many years and even decades, so that we start perhaps putting weight on after we get out of school, and this gradually increases our weight, gradually increases over the years, and this does our sleep apnea. So it's kind of like the frog in the boiling water analogy. We don't really realize how tired and sleepy and bad we feel, because it's not something that happens quickly, something that happens gradually over many years. So many people will come in to see us who have really severe sleep apnea and who don't really realize how sleepy they are until they get successfully treated. And then it's like a light bulb goes on and say, wow, this is how you're supposed to feel. I never realized that this is how we're supposed to function during the daytime. My headaches are better. I'm not waking up as much at nighttime. I don't have to go to the bathroom as much at nighttime. And I'm overall just able to do more during the day.
Are there some forms of sleep apnea that can prove fatal?
Yes. Well, very severe sleep apnea can prove fatal if it's not treated. What happens when we have severe sleep apnea is not only does our heart rate go up because we're making all this adrenaline we talked about before to try to keep us breathing at nighttime, but our oxygen level also falls off because we're not breathing well. And the combination of having low oxygen and high adrenaline is very bad for the heart. And so we have a lot of people who develop atrial fibrillation, for instance, or the heart beats irregularly. And we even have people who develop strokes at nighttime because their oxygen level is so low. So it can be fatal. There was some years ago about a 30-year-old player from the Philadelphia Eagles who died and had his CPAP machine that he wasn't using by his bedside. So probably sleep apnea that led to that individual's demise.
Which is a good place to jump off into the treatment. And I'm sure people have heard of the CPAP machine and wonder what that is. So what is it?
Well, there's several kinds of treatment. One is called CPAP. And CPAP stands for continuous positive airway pressure. And so what that is a little bit of air pressure that's applied to the back of the throat to try to keep the throat open at nighttime so that a person no longer snores, which is very nice for their bed partner. They really like that. But also, the air pressure holds the throat open at nighttime so they no longer develop sleep apnea. Their sleep apnea will go away. And that's CPAP, C-P-A-P. So that would be like a CPAP pressure of 15 centimeters of water pressure that you would breathe in with, and then you have to breathe out against 15 centimeters of water pressure because it's a continuous pressure. Some people find that to be uncomfortable and feel like they're struggling to breathe because they're having to breathe out against that pressure. So we've developed another form of treatment called BiPAP. And BiPAP has two pressures. It has a higher pressure to breathe in, say 15 centimeters of water as with CPAP, but you breathe out against a lower pressure, maybe 5 or 10 centimeters of water pressure. So it tends to be more comfortable for people. And the reason that we don't start everyone off with BiPAP is because it's a more expensive machine and the insurance won't allow us to. But for people who have CPAP intolerance, that's usually our next step, is to get them started on BiPAP.
And these are small little machines. They're about the size of a clock radio.
Yeah.
And then you wear a mask.
Yes, sir. So the machines have gotten a lot smaller over the past 20, 30 years with miniaturization of electronics in general. So the machine is smaller, maybe the size of a small clock radio, actually. Many of them come with a water tank because humidified air tends to make the use of CPAP a little bit more comfortable because people won't develop the dry mouth that they might have otherwise. And then we have little travel machines that people take with them when they go on trips because they want to feel good when you go on trips. If you're a businessman, you don't want to be sleepy while you're trying to negotiate a contract. So we have small little travel machines that are just little cubes, maybe about 5 or 4 inches in each diameter. So we've come a long way with CPAP and making them smaller. And then we have to apply the pressure that the CPAP machine generates somehow to the back of the throat. And so they will be connected through a tubing to some kind of interface that is put on the face. And there are three kinds of interfaces that we generally use. There's one called a full face mask, and what that is, it covers the nose and mouth. We have one that just covers the nose, and then we have another one called nasal pillows that just fit underneath the nose and have the least contact with the face. So what we do, practically speaking, is we decide that someone might have sleep apnea. We send them to get a sleep test, and we find out that they do. And then we often will send them to one of our local durable medical equipment companies, and they will work with a patient to try to find a face mask that is most comfortable with them. They take it home, try it out. Maybe they don't like it. They can try several different kinds of masks until they find one that is successful for them, that will help them to sleep at nighttime, that they can tolerate.
Dr. David Henson is our guest from Cookeville Regional as we talk about sleep apnea. Maybe you or someone you know is having trouble sleeping. Maybe sleep apnea is the test that you need to undergo. We'll talk about how you get that test. Dr. David Henson is our guest. Is this a continual lifetime treatment, or is there a so-called, quote, cure for sleep apnea?
Often it is a lifetime treatment. Sometimes if folks can lose enough weight so they get down to their approximate ideal body weight, then we would test them, do another sleep test, and find out that maybe they don't need CPAP therapy or oxygen therapy anymore. Unfortunately, that is few and far between, that people are successful in losing the amount of weight. We're talking maybe 50 or 100, 150 pounds in order so that they don't need to have that treatment anymore. We've had people in our clinic up to over 700 pounds, and of course they'll never be able to come off their CPAP or BiPAP machine. Sometimes there are other alternative treatments that will try to do surgery on the back of the throat to try to open the throat up so that we can maybe avoid CPAP or maybe not to have as much pressure as we would otherwise have. And this kind of surgery involves trimming of the soft palate in the back of the throat, sometimes taking the tonsils and adenoids out, trimming off the tongue. So it's a large surgery that can be quite painful, and it hurts for weeks and can seriously affect how a patient is able to eat or drink. And the other problem is that often this doesn't work. It may only work in about half the times that we do this kind of surgery. And then the whole sleep apnea can come back again when all those structures in the back of the throat relax. So that often sleep apnea, once we develop it, is more or less there for the rest of our lives.
I've often heard asked, do the fact that some of us have tonsils and some don't, and I think removing tonsils was much more popular when you and I were kids than maybe it is today. Does it have a relationship to sleep apnea or no?
In children, it does. So if children have sleep apnea, then that is one of the first things that the ear, nose, and throat doctor will do is to take out their adenoids and tonsils. And in adults, that's not so much the treatment because generally, as we get older, our tonsils and adenoids recede and aren't as big as they were when we were younger. And so that's usually not something that we do unless the adult maybe has big tonsils that meet in the middle, called kissing tonsils, then that sometimes is when we might try taking the tonsils and adenoids out as primary treatment. But usually CPAP is considered to be first-line treatment for sleep apnea.
Okay, so some misconceptions, or maybe they are, maybe they're not. True-false game, I guess, we're going to play. Everyone who snores has sleep apnea.
No, not everyone that snores has sleep apnea. They are different diseases, if you will. We know that snoring is where there is just partial closure of the airway. So when those muscles in the back of the throat, like the tongue and the soft palate, relax, they can get in the way of the airflow slightly, and they'll vibrate, and that's what causes snoring. But they don't necessarily obstruct or occlude or block off the airflow entirely. And we will even have some people who are on CPAP and successfully have their sleep apnea treated, but still will snore some, although not as much as before. So they are different diseases.
Is it true that you actually have to wake up during the course of the night to have sleep apnea, or can these cycles actually not wake you up?
Usually these cycles do not wake you up to awareness. If we were to do a EEG or brainwave analysis of what that looks like when you're having sleep apnea, often we will go to a higher level of sleep when we're having all these apnea periods. So it's not that it wakes you up, it just that it takes you to a higher level of sleep so that we don't get down to those like REM sleep or stage 3 sleep, which is the restorative sleep at nighttime.
You see it every day in the work that you do, but I don't think we all realize the importance of sleep to our bodies.
It is tremendously important. It not only is important because we can't function well if we have chronic sleep deprivation, but also we get more diseases if we are chronically sleep deprived. Chronic sleep deprivation has been associated with many, many different medical complications such as heart attacks, atrial fibrillation, dementia. We know that people who have obstructive sleep apnea is not treated have a higher incidence of dementia, and there's some reasons that we've recently found out why that happens. Even some cancers have been associated with chronic obstructive sleep apnea.
The good news is there's a resource right here in the Upper Cumberland that can help you with your sleep apnea issue, the Cookeville Regional Sleep Center. Dr. David Henson is part of the team there. Thank you for educating us today.
It's been my pleasure, sir.